grab some popcorn and a favorite chair. The love of movies is why we're here. Press play and don't delay. Let Phil be our guide to a cinematic day. Phil at the movies, through the silver screen to his podcast stream. Phil's covering every movie dream. Phil at the movies. Phil at the movies.
And there you have it. Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Walsh, and you are listening to Phil at the Movies. This is show number 149 of the podcast that is always for the love of movies. Wow, 149 episodes today. Next week, the big 150. And to celebrate the milestone, I guess we'll call it, though it feels a little presumptuous to say that. But I am going to be talking with a buddy of mine, and we're going to be revisiting a film from Christopher Nolan. Again, had to get a Christopher Nolan movie in sooner rather than later. I feel like I've had a little bit of a withdrawal, needed to revisit some of his movies. But the one that we're going to be talking about, and I will hold you in suspense until next week, it is a movie that, dare I say, is underrated. I think there has been a lot of reappraisals and reevaluations in recent years, which is, again, wonderful in my eyes. But I still think, in sort of the grand scheme of his filmography as a director, it is one that certainly a lot of people may not go to or think about necessarily, or may, you know, think about it in a more negative or confusing context. But again, I'll leave that all for you next week. Talking about a movie from the past next week. Today, let's talk about a movie from now. And I'm actually just coming out of the movie theater when I'm recording this, so it's fresh in my mind. And spoiler alert ahead, I will flag you when there are spoils. So if you want to avoid that, I will give you a proper warning. But I will try to sort of keep this on an even keel and sort of give more of a broad discussion about this film. The movie is Companion, and it stars Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid, two actors who are just constantly popping up in any number of films. Most recently with Sophie Thatcher, I would remember from Heretic, which came out last year, which also starred Hugh Grant, another just sort of over-the-top, bonkers, and wonderfully charming horror film. And Companion is right in that wheelhouse, but it is on a whole other, dare I say, artificial level. Sort of hinting at what this is going to be about. I will say to start, this is a movie, if you can avoid the sort of the trailers, you can avoid a lot of the discussion, good. I went into this movie practically blind. And I think I enjoyed it all the more because I had a limited understanding of what exactly I was going to be seeing. As I understand, there is a more recent trailer for this film, which gives a more hint at the plot and an idea of the premise. The first teaser that I saw back, feels like a couple months ago now, was very short and to the point. We see Sophie Thatcher, we see Jack Quaid. They're at a weekend getaway in a cabin. They're having dinner. They're both at a long table. She's sitting on one end. He's on the other. And he slowly slides a candle, a burning candle, mind you, underneath her hand. And we watch it start to burn. And again, that just sort of set the tone of what this movie could be about. And so immediately it caught my eye. And again, being a fan of the genre, this seemed like, all right, right in my wheelhouse. And, you know, January has been kind of more of a miss than a hit for me when it comes to movies. I watched a number of new films this month, but none have quite landed. And so I was really looking, you know, going to this one thinking, okay, I hope this film doesn't disappoint, because you know, don't want to sort of close out January on a sad note, on a negative one. And fortunately, that was not the case. This is a great film. This is an entertaining film. It is bloody. It is surprisingly hilarious. I was not expecting the amount of dark comedic humor sort of fused throughout this film, on top of the more poignant and emotional beats. There's actually a very compelling story behind all of the sort of bizarre and over-the-top antics that occur throughout the film's runtime. So just to give you a brief idea of the plot, we meet Iris and Josh. They are seemingly a normal couple going away for a weekend getaway with some of Josh's friends up in a secluded mountainside. Everything appears to be kosher. Everything appears to be on the level. Well, things are revealed pretty quickly. And this is, again, I will mention a spoiler alert if you want to avoid it, if you haven't seen it. But if you have seen it, you'll know where I'm going. So spoiler alert right now. Iris is not who she seems. She is not what she seems. She is, in fact, an artificial intelligence. She is a robot for all intents and purposes. She's a sex robot. You know, she's a companion robot. The movie is set in the not too distant future. It's familiar, but you sort of have that cutting edge, you know, driverless cars and, of course, sex robots that are now acting as full-fledged companions for the lonely in the world. And Jack Quaid's character certainly falls into that category. You know, very much a lonely, low self-esteem, basement dweller type that just is looking out and latching on for any kind of companionship. And of course, finds it in this sort of subservient artificial intelligence known as Iris. So that is sort of the basic tenet, if you will, of where this movie is going. So right off the bat, we know things are not as they seem. And the movie does a great job of not sort of introducing that fact early on, though we get glimpses with Iris that she's, you know, maybe a little shy, a little repressed, but not quite in sync, if you will, with the other people at the cabin retreat. She seems to truly be an outsider, and she's so desperate to fit in and sort of understand this world and this connection, but there's just something that's quite out of her reach. And of course, we discover later on that she is, of course, a robot. And at first, you're thinking, oh, okay, maybe this is just a secret that Josh is holding. But of course, no. His friends are all aware that he has this companion with him. And they sort of treat her with sort of begrudging respect. But one of his friends, Kat, is sort of very much, I wouldn't say she's opposed to the idea, but she's definitely not in favor of it by any stretch of the imagination. Now, here's where some more spoilers come into the picture. Everything seems to be going okay over the weekend. Kat's boyfriend is this, you know, wealthy Russian sort of businessman, oligarch type, and you know, sort of, you know, presented as this, you know, very much, you know, sophisticated, or maybe not sophisticated is not the right word, but very much a man of the world, wise beyond his years in a lot of ways. And, you know, things are looking very, very, very interesting, or very, very calm, so to speak. And, of course, there's always the calm before the storm. And during a triggering event, Iris ends up killing Sergey, the cat's boyfriend. And, you know, she does it in self-defense, but it's because he's coming on to her and you know, getting physical, and she has to defend herself. Now, everything is, you know, going to hell in a handbasket. Like, oh my God, Sergey's been killed. This is horrible. She's covered in blood. Well, that's when, again, the tables get turned again, where we realize that this was not a programming glitch. This wasn't just sort of the robot, you know, reaching that next level of ascendance or transcendence, if you will, but instead a plot, a ploy by Josh and his friends to essentially frame Iris as the killer of Sergei so they can go and collect all his money he has up there and then just sort of pin the blame on the robot. You know, the robot went rogue. And it's a very interesting breakdown in the dichotomy where you then see, okay, who is pulling the strings here? Who is the puppet master? And what I like about this film is it's presented at first, you're thinking, okay, Iris is going to be the monster. She is the machine. You know, she is, for all intents and purposes. And this is going to be kind of the, you know, the monster, you know, or the machine turning on the controller, so to speak. And it is that, but in kind of a much more subversive way than I was expecting. Because even though Iris is a robot, she is artificial intelligence, the movie does a great job of kind of being pro-robot in a way where we are on her side. And with her, as she realizes that she's been put in this terrible situation, that she really has been manipulated and abused, for a lack of a better word, by the very people that she is there to serve and support. She is that companion to Josh, and everything gets turned upside down with the fact that he has hacked into her programming system and essentially reconfigured her settings so that he could control her in a way that she would act outside of her programming ramifications. Well, of course, everything gets cranked up a notch. There's more glitches than you can imagine, and a few more twists along the way. There's another one of Josh's friends that's with him, Eli. His boyfriend, you know, is presented as a very, you know, casual and sort of unsuspecting relationship, but then it's revealed that his boyfriend is actually also a companion robot. So you end up having double the robots, double the trouble, double the fun. And the film becomes almost a chase to track down Iris, and then Iris trying to break free of her captors. It's a darkly funny movie about survival, escape, and bloody robot action all the way through. At its core, which again, I sort of get to the point of this being an emotional movie, I was surprised at just how poignant and raw it gets, particularly when you have the scenes where Iris is realizing that she is this artificial intelligence, that she is merely being manipulated in a program as part of a machine. And it's really this battle in a way to understand what it means to be human, what it means to feel, what it means to act and have free will and to love. And it's sort of interesting that you have the character of Josh, who is flesh and blood. He is human after all, but in a lot of ways, he is almost this machine. He is kind of robotic, where he is so incapable of actions and emotions that he has to, you know, go and find a robotic companionship to sort of give his life meaning and void. And yet he is incapable of making his own choices, you know, living up to his own responsibilities, that he sort of has to farm everything out to a robot, including attempting to, you know, use the robot to frame a murder. I mean, it's really interesting where the human character truly is the monster in a way, is the robot, and the robot ends up being the character that is the most sympathetic and identifiable. And it's sort of, you know, triumphant in a way, and again, this gets into the spoilers, whereby, of course, the end, you know, Iris really does turn the tables completely and breaks free of her metaphorical chains and controls and becomes this thinking, almost living being in a way. And it really gets to that idea of what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to have free will? And sort of tying it back to that scene that I mentioned from the trailer, which again, when you see it in the film, it has perfect context, where Josh is trying to make Iris feel pain and sort of submit her to his whims, if you will, before he deprograms her and turns her over to the necessary authorities. And it's really an intense moment because you're watching her, you know, robots are not meant to
to feel anything, that I'm meant to feel pain. And yet you're watching as the flame bubbles up under her skin, burning it and scarring it and going almost right down to the mechanical arm and leaving her with this, you know, horribly disfigured, skin, burn mark and, deformity. But by the end of the film, she strips away the sort of synthetic skin and plastic coating and reveals just this mechanical arm, which is kind of really ultimately what she is. But she accepts it. She accepts who she is. She embraces her sort of her robot humanity. And as she's driving away, again, spoilers again, full head, as she's driving away to freedom, she passes another couple on her way out, and they're just sort of driving alongside, and it's implied heavily that the female companion in the car is just like her, and she gives sort of a knowing nod and then waves with her mechanical arm as sort of a symbol of her freedom and sort of unyielding spirit and ability to reclaim or find some basic humanity, despite the fact that she is a machine for all intents and purposes. I love this film. I really was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. It's funny. It's smartly written. The performances are hilarious and dynamic. Quaid and Thatcher are dynamite in this film. No glitches in their chemistry whatsoever. And it's always great to see Jack Quaid sort of really when he can turn up the notch a little bit. He's very comfortable playing sort of the geeky guy. But then when the moment calls for it, he can become this maniacal monster. And Sophie Thatcher, she is just killing it for all intents and purposes, no pun intended. Certainly she has found a foothold in this genre, and I hope to see her in more films because she is she's dynamite. She lights up the screen, she's captivating, and even when she's playing this robot, it's just a marvelous transformation because, again, little moments and movements with her eye, twitches of the mouth, you get the sense that this is a being trying to be human in a way. And it's a wonderful performance and an arc that you sort of watch her go from this shy, insecure android for all intents and purposes to becoming a free-thinking and free-will being who may not be human but has the instincts and motivations of any other human being. And I found that to be very powerful and oddly inspiring, which you would not necessarily expect from a robot. But then, there we go. That's the beauty of this genre. And just sort of the trappings of the film, even though it is set in the future, there was sort of this kind of like 1950s look to some of the clothes and even the way Iris is dressed in the movie. It's kind of felt very much like a throwback to the sort of the 1950s stereotypes of sort of like, the perfect, woman and how you should look, how you should dress, subservient to your man and husband and whatnot. And I thought that was a very nice sort of aesthetic and kind of a hat tip to sort of, address the bigger themes of going on that were going on in this film about repression and control and dominance and free will and free thinking. I really thought, okay, they know what they're doing with this. And those, again, just little fun little sort of, Easter eggs, if you will, that sort of paint to the broader picture of what this film was trying to say about just sort of basic humanity and free will. And again, I said this last week with the Silence of the Lambs commentary. That's why I love horror films, because they can push these topics. And again, this film, even though it is extremely fictional, it is dealing with situations that are not too far off in our own world. I mean, again, artificial intelligence is here. Robots are here, and it's only going to continue. I mean, sex robots are probably going to become more and more commonplace. Companions, if you will, are going to probably become more and more commonplace. And these are things that we as a society have to deal with and sort of understand, okay, what is humanity? Where does it begin? Where does it end? And certainly when you're introducing artificial intelligence into the equation, I mean, that's just opening up a whole other can of worms. And again, that's what I love about the genre, is it can really tackle these sensitive and provocative issues that we're wrestling with in our own day-to-day lives and sort of put them on the broadest canvas possible, and then, of course, make it entertaining and bloody and spectacular and do all the wonderful tricks that movies can accomplish. But Companion, what a great way to end January for me, particularly with the other films that I've seen this month that were very much misses more than hits. But we're closing out January strong, and we're rolling into February next week, ending the month on a high note, beginning the next month with a bounce in our step. There we go. Thank you, Companion. Definitely go see this movie, particularly, again, for fans of the genre and even just casual movie-going audiences. I think anyone will have a great time with this film because it's not only surprisingly funny, it's just a dark, scary, campy, if I can use that word, time at the movies. So definitely check it out for your viewing pleasure. But that does it for me, everybody. Want to thank you, as always, for tuning in each and every Friday. I'll do a quick plug. If you could be so kind to rate and review this podcast on Apple, share it, recommend it with your family, your friends, movie buffs, anyone in your life who needs a little extra movie info and entertainment in their lives, certainly would appreciate that. As well as liking and subscribing to the YouTube channel. And next week, we'll be back with the 150th episode of this show. Again, started it 3 years ago. I didn't expect it to go beyond maybe a couple months. And here we are 3 years later, and it is all because of you, the listeners, you, the friends of Phil at the Movies. And I am forever grateful to each and every one of you who takes the time to listen to this show or watch it each and every Friday. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. That's all for now, everybody. Don't forget, support your local cinema, buy physical media, and I'll be back next week where we'll do this all over again for the love of movies.